wrong ways, entered a major time of depression within his life. And we saw some of the causes of that. Last week as we looked at it, we recognized that from the first moment we meet Elijah in the Scriptures, he was a guy who was sure that God was the living God. He was a guy who was sure that his role was being a servant of the living God. And he really trusted strongly in what God said. All those are admirable things, and we can go along with those. Those should be part of our lives also. He was strong when he confronted Ahab. He was specially cared for by God when he was concealed by the brook. He was content in Zarephath where a widow had meal, some grain that never gave out, and oil that never gave out. He was in control when the widow's son died and he prayed to God and the boy came back to life again. He was strong in the conflict with all the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel and had major confidence there. But he went into a deep, deep time of depression right after that. What I'd like to have you do is follow in the book of 1 Kings and chapter 19 as we look again into this story of Elijah.
And Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done, also how he had executed all the prophets with the sword. Then Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah.
So let the gods do to me, and more also, if I do not make your life as the life of one of them by tomorrow about this time.
And when he saw that, he arose and ran for his life and went to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and left his servant there. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a broom tree. And he prayed that he might die.
It is enough. Now, Lord, take my life, for I am no better than my father's.
Then, as he lay and slept under a broom tree, suddenly an angel touched him.
Arise and eat.
Then he looked, and there by his head was a cake baked on coals and a jar of water. So he ate and drank and lay down again. And the angel of the Lord came back the second time and touched him and said,
Arise and eat, because the journey is too great for you.
So he arose and ate and drank, and he went in the strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights as far as Horeb, the mountain of God. And there he went into a cave and spent the night in that place. Behold, the word of the Lord came to him.
What are you doing here, Elijah?
I have been very zealous for the Lord God of hosts. For the children of Israel have forsaken your covenant, torn down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. I alone have left, and they seek to take my life.
Go up and stand on the mountain before the Lord.
And behold, the Lord passed by. A great and strong wind tore into the mountains and broke the rocks in pieces before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. Was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a still small voice. So it was, when Elijah heard it, that he wrapped his face in his mantle and went out and stood in the entrance of the cave. Suddenly, a voice came to him.
What are you doing here, Elijah?
I have been very zealous for the Lord God of hosts, because the children of Israel have forsaken your covenant, torn down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. I alone am left, and they seek to take my life.
Go, return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus, and when you arrive, anoint Hazael as king over Syria. Also you shall anoint Jehu, the son of Nimshi, as king over Israel. And Elisha, the son of Shaphat, of Abel-Meholah, you shall anoint as prophet in your place. It shall be that whoever escapes the sword of Hazael, Jehu will kill. And whoever escapes the sword of Jehu, Elisha will kill. Yet I have reserved 7,000 in Israel, all whose knees have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him.
It's a rather exciting story, and you hear all these different things. And there's a passage we've known over the years from the Bible, but we're going to look into it a little bit deeper as we open this up today. And especially I want to look at what God does for this depression that Elijah was in. Last week we talked about some of the causes for it. First of all, he was fatigued. He'd been for a long time. He ran almost a marathon back from Mount Carmel. And when he got there, he hadn't had time really to eat before he heads out and has to flee for his life, or he does flee for his life. And fatigue makes you where you don't think clearly. Have you noticed that in your life? You get tired, physically tired. You can't function properly. He had hopes. I mean, I'm sure he thought, okay, Elijah's, this thing's happened, so I'm going in, and Ahab's going to saw the power of God, and Jezebel's going to change, but no change happened. In fact, Jezebel sunk in her heels. He started walking by sight and not by faith. Remember she just said, may I die like the prophets if I don't kill you before tomorrow. And he was disillusioned. You can tell from his story. You remember, only I am left. The disillusionment that comes sometimes as we look to God's people instead of looking to God alone. And he was short-sighted. I mean, he's looking at the present time. He doesn't look for the long thing of what God's doing. And as you look at things short-sightedly, many times you can become very depressed because you're just looking at the now rather than looking at what God can do later on. And sometimes to do that, you have to look in the past to see what God's done and know that God's not taken aback at situations that come into our lives. He can handle those. Well, today I want to just talk about him a bit and what God did with him. Because you see, he did something that was wrong. Elijah did. That's one of the things I love about the Scriptures. It shows us God's people, but it shows the mistakes they made. It shows the sins they were involved in. It doesn't paint a picture like all the other literature of the ancients does, where nobody's ever wrong. Nobody ever messes up. God shows us warts and all of the people who He calls and works with. And Elijah, his big mistake was he moved from faith to fear. He had strong faith in the Lord, just really strong. I mean, he's up on the mountain praying after the fire fell that God would bring rain. You remember? And he prayed seven times. He didn't give up. Finally, there was a cloud the size of a man's hand that his servant saw in the sky, and that was enough. He just knew God was going to work. He had marvelous faith, but he got his eyes off the Lord. And Jezebel sent the major message to him that wiped him out. And if she wanted to kill him, she could have sent the guy, instead of sending a messenger, she could have sent an assassin. But I don't think she wanted to kill him, because if she killed him, they would have had a martyr on their hands. Here you had a whole lot of people that had just seen this. She didn't want to deal with all that. So she wants to get rid of him, and he has to leave. Because he's fearful. If instead he had not run, what would have happened? We don't know. You never know what happens or what's going to happen if. You know, if he had stayed, it could have been that all the people were moving there and they would have come against Jezebel and Ahab's regime strongly and said, we're going to worship the Lord God. You're not right. Who knows what would have taken place as revival was beginning to happen in the land. But now, revival shut down. Because the main person that's the key one who God's using to bring revival, you know what he does? runs away. Runs away from the situation. What would have happened? We never know. Never know what could have taken place. You need to be very careful. We don't want to walk in sin, because when we're in sin, when we walk away from faith, because that's what the sin is here, when we walk away from faith, a lot of things don't get done. Do you understand that? God's chosen to work through people. His choice. He could have used angels, but instead, He's choosing to use us to accomplish things in His kingdom. But it takes walking by faith, not so much by sight, walking by faith, trusting God. Because if you get your eyes off the Lord, you'll be fearful. I love the words that Jesus said. Remember, the boat was getting rocked. They thought they were going down. And these seasoned fishermen come to Jesus, wake Him up and say, "Don't you care?" And Jesus says, "Don't be afraid." What's the counterbalance to fear? Faith. Only believe, Jesus says. You don't need to fear. So, Elijah messed up there. Have you ever messed up there? I have. I've messed up there. It's good to be reminded of that. And God chose this through this man, Elijah. There are other people who also went into depression. Moses in Numbers prays that God would kill him. Job in chapter 3 says, I just wish I were dead. It's better that I'd never been born. And Jonah chapter 4, even after he had great victory under that plant that grew up, Jonah just says, I want to die. Depression. It can happen to all of us if we get our eyes off what God's doing. Now, God's response to depression, He responded in four different words to Elijah. And I want us to look at those, because I think they provide us with some really good help in knowing how to deal with depression. You may not be in depression. If you are, these are good things to help you. But maybe you've run into somebody who has that, and you'll be able to encourage them, a believer, along these ways. The first thing that God did was He met his physical needs. How did He do it? Yeah, He brought food and water, right? And who provided them? An angel. Isn't that neat? God sent an angel to provide for them. Now, I just tell you, many times God does that to His people. You don't see them, but they're actively working in our lives on God's behalf to provide things for us. Here, this angel provided for physical needs. That happened with Jesus when He was in the wilderness, remember? He was in the wilderness for 40 days, and angels came and provided for His physical sustenance. And here, God used an angel to do this again. There was some bread that they cooked and some water that the angel, or it says a little cake in the old King James, I guess angel food cake. I don't know what other kinds of cake angels have, but it was there. It was hot. It was there were rocks there that were heated up, and it was on that, and then Elijah was able to take that. And then you remember what happened? He ate it, and then what did he do? Goes back to sleep. Because again, if you're physically wiped out, you're not going to be good. You need that refreshment. And I've talked to many people who have been in a lot of depression, and some of the things they need is a lot of refreshment physically. They need a time of rest. They need a time, many times, of sleep. Many times they haven't slept because their minds are constantly working on things. They need that rest away from all that. And so Elijah received that. And God took care of him eating. So the second time, the angel says, you need this because you're going to have a major event. And this was supernatural stuff that God gave him, because he didn't eat again for 40 days. That's a long time to go. But you remember, Moses was on the mountain for 40 days, right? There's no record of any food there. In fact, he came down, and after you've been on a fast for 40 days, you can't just start going and saying, oh, I've been out, I hadn't eaten for a long time, I'm going to go eat and go get you a steak and mashed potatoes and all you couldn't, your stomach would not be able to handle that. So you've got to go off the fast slowly. But you know what Moses did? He goes back up on the mountain. He's back up there for another 40 days. He was 80 days without eating, and God sustained him during that time. You know, God can do those kinds of things. That's what he did here. But one of the things that I it was just very interesting to me to notice, God didn't lecture him about his lack of faith. Did you notice that? In all this, you don't have God saying, now, Elijah, you were such a strong man. What happened to you? He doesn't say that to him. We would say that, right? But God is not like us. He did not come to him with any sternness. Do you see any sternness here? He asked him the question, what are you doing here? But you know, God often asks questions. And whenever God's asking a question, it's not because he does not know the answer. Whenever God asks a question in all the scriptures, it's because He wants the people who are having the question asked to them to process and see what's going on in their life, where they are, what's taking place. Why are you here? And there's no chastisement. He never chastises him even for this. And I think that just shows the nature of our God. You don't need to be scared to come to God when you're depressed. You don't need to be scared to come to God. You don't have to have that fear, even when you've sinned. You can go to Him. He loves to show mercy according to Micah chapter 7 and verse 18. Well, the second thing that God did was provided him with a new vision of himself. Because you see, when you go into fear, you've forgotten who God is. You just have, that's gone out of your way. You just don't understand again who God is. And so God gives him a brand new vision of himself. He's in a cave on the mountain that God came down and spoke to Moses at. And when God asked him that, why are you here? What's the answer? If he'd answered properly, he did answer, right? He's going to take away my life and nobody's around. He was just saying those whole things. What's the problem? Fear. God was showing him who he really was. And he did it by giving him a visual illustration of who he was. First, there was this great wind. Wind that's strong enough to break rocks off a mountain. That's a pretty strong wind, wouldn't you think? I was talking to Billy Graham Paulus, and we were talking about the concrete that they used to build the training center. And he said it's graded so that it would withstand a 300-mile-an-hour wind. That's a really strong wind. But I guess if it gets up stronger than that, you'd see parts of that concrete building begin to deal with. You know, so the wind came by strongly. But you notice there was this phrase that said, but God was not in the wind. And then there was this earthquake. You ever been in an earthquake? Anybody here ever been in an earthquake? I've been in a little one we had here that sounded like a big truck going down the road. Took my glass and just shook it a little bit, you know. But I've not been in an earthquake, like when books fall off of shelves and shelves fall down to the floor and the fixtures in the house start swinging 40 to 45 degree angles. You know, I've not been in that kind of earthquake. And I imagine that's just terrible. It's amazing. But this earthquake took place. And then there's this fire. But what did it say after the earthquake? But God was not in the earthquake. And then the fire. And then it says, God was not in the fire. Well, He wasn't in those things. Then it says there was a small, still small voice, right? A real little voice. And that's where God was. You see, the first things are showing forth God's power. Because Elijah had seen that. He had seen the power of God fall on Mount Carmel. You know, it's too easy for us to get confused with the events that God does and with God. Sort of like it's easy for us to get confused with the gifts that God gives us and the giver of the gifts. We can get to where those things become more important than the person. And so God was making sure that he understood. Power, yeah, he can do that. He was showing how great he is, but that's not God. God is known by His presence with His people. And so when he hears this little voice, it's God speaking, then all of a sudden he goes out of the cave and then God speaks to him again. And God says to him one other time, what does God say? Why are you here? And you know what Elijah says? He repeats the same thing he said before. You ever notice that's how people are when they get depressed? The same loop just takes place in their brain and it just plays over and over and over and over and over and over and over. I can keep going longer if you need me to. And over again, because that's all that's going on in their brain. And they just hear that over and over and over. And so he says the very same thing again. I think it's two things are interesting there. First of all, again, God didn't chastise him. The second thing is, God knows you've got to talk about this. If you keep it bottled up, it's not going to work. But God didn't chastise him. Instead, God did this. Look what God does. God provides him task to complete. God said, he didn't say, okay, hang out here for another 40 days and just really, you know, sit around in your pity and have a nice pity party. God said, I want you to do this. I mean, it's there in the Scripture. Verse 15 of chapter 19 says, "Then the Lord said to him," this is right after he just said, I'm the only one left. "Then God said, go return your way to the wilderness of Damascus. And when you arrive, anoint Hazael as king over Syria." What he's telling him to do is he's giving him the task that prophets have. You know what prophets did? Prophets anointed kings. Remember Samuel anointed the first king in Israel, Saul, and then he anointed David to be king? That's the job of prophets. And so he gives him the job, the task of a prophet. Go anoint kings for service. And then the second thing he did, he said, "And I want you to anoint, to get Elijah to be with you." So you had Elijah going after Elisha. And Elisha comes in the role of a servant, in the role of an apprentice, as somebody to be with him, to walk with him. Because you know what's going to happen. Elijah is going to take over for Elijah. And Elisha is going to eventually take over that. So get someone that's around. You have to have somebody that you can communicate with, that you can talk with. And so God put forth these four things in his life. He said he met his physical needs. He gave him a new vision of who he really was, of who God was. He gave him a task to accomplish. And he gave him a friend to walk through this part of his life with. God never meant for us to walk through life in single mode with no people around us. He always wants us to have people around us. No solitary person walking. He wants us to walk as friends. You know, guys, you ought to have another guy that you can be real with, that you can talk about things with, that you everything they know about you. Elijah and Elisha, they shared life together from there. Ladies, you need to have a gal, a lady with you who you can share things with. We've got to have it. God didn't make us to be solitary folks who never talk. He made us to be people who interact and who have lives with other people. And so we have to do that. James writes and says, Elijah was a guy like us. In James 5:7. Elijah was a man with a nature like ours. He got messed up. So I want you to do something for me. I want you to break off into a couple of groups. And I'd like to have you in those groups, I'd like to have you talk with each other about these things. How has the Lord provided a new glimpse of Himself to you? When is a time when God showed you in a new way His power? Now, He's not going to necessarily have an earthquake or a wind, you know, tornado or fire come down. I mean, you know, it's just where He showed you His power, where He did something to show you He was a God who was there. And when did He show you something that showed you His presence? So for me, it's when He answered a prayer that I had, and we needed God to come in and deal with the situation, and God dealt with it. It was really neat because there was no way I could affect any change whatsoever. I was really at a loss for being able to accomplish anything. And God moved the situation. And He did it wonderfully, where nobody got hurt, where the things just moved beautifully. And God showed me His power. And I just drew close to His presence because He's such a wonderful God. The second thing is this. What new things is He calling you to accomplish in your life for the kingdom? What's He calling you for? He always calls us and gives us a task of something that He wants us to be doing. And you've got to be quiet before Him and ask Him. And for that season of life, it could be that you do these for periods of time. You don't do them. Sometimes He gives us things to do for all of our life. I mean, He called me to be a teacher and a pastor. So, that's my life's calling. I understand that. But He's also called me to do some other things that are for seasons of my life. Right now, He's called me to be a son who takes care of mom and dad. And that's my task. That's the season of my life that I'm to be involved in. You know? Sometimes when you have little ones at home, you're called as for that season of your life to be involved with them, you moms. I mean, you're called for that season of time. But that's going to go by fast. I know. It doesn't seem like it most days, but it goes by and it's gone. So God, what task is God calling you to accomplish for the King of Life? And here's the third one. These are just questions for you to think about. You can talk about them some. Who is in your life to walk through this part of your life journey with? Who's there? Who's there for you? And I know if you're married, you got husband or wife. If you're not married, you got mom or dad. I understand that. But there needs to be another person that God will bring along. Who is there that you can share with and talk with? And it's best to have guys having guys and gals having gals, because you need to share really stuff about you. And who knows the stuff about you? Who knows your secrets? Who knows where you've messed up and where you've had victory? Who knows that it's not you, it's God whenever there's a victory? You know, who knows those things? Because they know you. And they know how to be God. So those things I'd like you to do. So I'm going to have you break up in groups of three. Okay? Would you do that? And I'd like you to answer one of these questions each, because we don't have that much time. So, okay? Here we go. Break up right now.